Fed Heads, welcome to another episode of Sharing Our Pairings. This is Sharing Our Pairings, episode 69, La Barba 2.0 with Tony Bellotto, our special guest tonight. I am your host, John the Cigar Surge, and we are broadcast live through YouTube and Cigar Federation. You can pick us up after the fact on every podcast app pretty much in the world. If you find a podcast app miraculously that does not carry us, let us know, because we're pretty much everywhere. Most of you are listening through iTunes. We appreciate you listening. Make sure to give us an up thumbs, up vote, up arrow, whatever that up vote is. Give it to us and give us a comment. We appreciate the feedback. We, of course, picked up on the Armed Forces Radio Network around the world, and we're listened to in over 165 countries, which is incredible. I'm joined by my co-host and good buddy, Robbie Rass. Rob, welcome back.
How many countries?
Over 165. They did the math.
How many countries are there in the world?
I don't know. I could just be making stuff up. It was an Excel spreadsheet, though.
I think there's like over 200, I think.
Say that again?
I think there's over 200.
So we've got, we're in, the majority of the countries in the world listen to us.
Yeah, it's wild. Frightening. I mean, when you go through, you pull up some of these countries and you're like, while I appreciate that you're listening to me in that country, A, that you don't speak English, and B, I'm not sure why you'd be tuning in, but, you know, C, hey, we're glad you do.
I think it's awesome.
There's 196 countries. I just looked it up for you.
196, and we got 160 of them?
165.
Dude, we're on the way to world domination right now.
Huge contingent from Germany, Norway, United Kingdom.
Norway, that's my people.
That's your people. That must be why they're tuning in.
That's where I have some Norwegian lineage.
Are you a Viking?
Not personally. But maybe somewhere back down the Rasmussen line, there may have been a Viking or two. I'm not really sure.
Viking last name.
It's, you know, it sounds a lot tougher than I am. Let's just put it that way. But things are good, man. Just got back from vacation at about 1 a.m. this morning and battling another cold. And this is my first cigar in like 3 weeks, so... definitely not my first beers. I've got one scotch, I've got a bourbon, and I've got a beer. I've had a lot of that on vacation, but I wasn't able to smoke too many cigars. So I'm excited, man. Excited. Glad to have Tony back on the show. Tony, how's everything going, man?
Good. Just working away over here, man. Trying to get stuff ready for the show. Yeah, that's about it. Did my wine project, released that. I'm going to drink that later on. It's in the cooler now.
So you made a wine?
Not personally. We blended it, and it's being made in Barcelona, Spain, and then we import it through Oakland.
Nice.
Yeah. So
I could drive down to Oakland and grab a bottle. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, just break in.
Yeah. What the hell? All right, we'll talk about that later. That's awesome, yeah. Man.
So yeah, I've been doing that. We're in like 11 states now, so been on that train. This thing with Caldwell's coming to a head, you know. With him distributing my stuff, and everything's good, just busy.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So can you believe, Tony, it was August of 2014 when we last had you on the show?
Wow.
Seems like forever ago.
What is it, May of 16?
May of 16,
yeah. Wow, really, it's been that long? I feel it's like we've had Tony on this show like three times.
Yeah.
This is the third.
Oh, well, there you go, see?
There you go.
That's my math.
The third. Oh. Because I did the show, and then I did this one, and then this one again.
That's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking Cigar Chat, because we've had you on Cigar Chat a couple of times, too. And we'll probably have you on again coming up before IPCPR. That's awesome. This is the first time that you're going to have a booth, right?
No, I'm going to be in the Caldwell booth. I'm not going to have my own specific...
Well, you'll have your area, right? I mean, you're going to be...
Yeah, I'll have a small space. I mean, I don't have that. I only have... one cigar, four sides.
Yeah, but I mean, we'll be interviewing you separately from Caldwell. I mean, we'll be doing the Caldwell interview, but we'll be doing the La Barba interview. That's a totally separate thing for us.
Yeah, correct. Absolutely. Yes. Once you get your own interview, that's when you made it, man.
Oh, I know. I can't wait.
Big time.
That's awesome. Unfortunately, I didn't have any La Barba on me, so I'm smoking something different tonight. I'm smoking the Jericho Hill Lancero, which is the 12 Angry Men. Is that what it is? John?
Sure. I mean, I'm totally out of touch. I've been opening so many cigar stores, I don't know whether I'm coming or going anymore.
I'll figure it out before I get a chance to talk about it.
So, Tony, I'm smoking the La Barba Purple Lancero, and I'm not, I said before we started here, I don't know that I've had this before, but this is phenomenal. This is like hitting on all cylinders for me. I didn't really know what to pair with it, so I kind of went with a broad spectrum multi-shot, but I'm been cheating before the show started and doing some Glenmorangie here, and so far so good. I'm pretty stoked.
It's funny, we did at the shop, the reason why I'm home is because we had a whiskey tasting at my shop today, and we did all the Glenmorangies with some Nat Sherman stuff, and it was going pretty well. We did the Nectar d'Or, which is the Sauternes barrel.
Oh, it's so good.
We did the Quinta Rubin, which is the port barrel. We did the regular, and then we did the sherry cask.
La Santa, yeah.
Those were really cool to line up, you know, side by side to taste the difference just between the barrels, because I'm pretty sure that the whiskey itself is the same. So
I think it is. I think they just, I mean, they're really well known for doing different kinds of finishes, and I really appreciate that, because you can take the same spirit and just get all these different takes on it, and they're all interesting.
Yeah, absolutely.
So when we last talked, I think you just finished your Somali level one, and I don't know if you were thinking about going for Somali level two. Did you go for Somali level two, or is
it technically it's, I'm in the WSET, so I was I was level three, and then the next step would be the diploma program. But there's nowhere to teach the class prior. You have to have the class above. And my teacher, she has to be a master of wine in order to teach the diploma class. She can't come back and teach the diploma class until she gets her master of wine. And the closest place that I could do it's in Philadelphia, and that's 6 hours from me. So, you know, I could do it all online, but I'd have to find the exact same wines. It's easier to do the first two levels, like, remotely, but the third and the fourth you have to really be, you know, because PA has different wines than we do, and, you know, it would just be the interaction is what's important between you and the person. So I'm kind of just still waiting to see what she's going to do, because it would take her another probably 3 years to get the master, to be a master of wine in order for her to come back to teach the diploma class. So I'm kind of stuck for now.
So it's like you are the Kung Fu master, and you can't find another master to continue your teaching, really.
Correct.
That's fair.
I think there's only like 20 masters of wine. I'd have to look it up, but there's not that many.
That's a pretty small group. All right. Well, that was a lot of dead air. So I'm just going to get into my first pairing here. This is what happened.
I thought I finished what I got.
You did, and I didn't pick up on cues, because this is what happens when you take a week off the show and you're working all the time, is you just, you know, you just lose it. So I'm just going to talk about my first pairing here, and we'll kind of talk about what you're doing, Tony, as we're going. As I said, my first pairing here is Glenmorangie. I'm going a little fancy pants with the first one, going with the 18 Extreme Rare. This was a gift for, what did I do? That's right, I won for the first time ever, I won my football pool handily, I might add, because I dominated all year, and this was my reward, because I'm with a bunch of Scotch fiends in that league. And, of course, the gift comes with the caveat that, of course, it needs to be open and everyone needs to have some, and I'm happy to share it because, I mean, that's a lot of whiskey. So a little bit about Glenmorangie for those who want to know, the nerds out there. It's a Northern Highlands distillery founded in 1843, first produced whiskey in 1849. They have 6 wash stills and 6 spirit stills, which is a fair number, and they're producing 6 million liters of spirit per year, which puts them in the top 10 for production in all of Scotland. For those dealing in freedom gallons, that's 1.58 million freedom gallons. And this is 43% ABV, so it's not bad. I wish it was cask strength, but, you know, it's tough to get cask strength in 18-year. What's cool about it is... And we kind of already talked about that they've, Glenmorangie has so many different finishes. And I tend to sort of pivot toward Glenmorangie as a go-to if I don't know what to pair with. Glenmorangie is usually my lineup because it tends to kind of go with everything. And so far it's going really well with this La Barba Purple. Rob, what do you got first up your lining there?
Well, I'm smoking the Jericho Hill. It's actually 12 Honest Men is what the cigar is called. Not Angry Men, like the movie. I think this is the exact same blend as the regular, I believe. It's got this Mexican San Andreas wrapper, Nicaraguan binders and fillers, and it's a fantastic cigar. It's actually got a little bit more spice in this Vitola, which is kind of what I expected, but you're also picking up a lot of that sweetness from the wrapper as well. I'm going to start with... I'm going with some everyman pairings, except for my beer. I'm going to start with... I'm going with the Doors 12-year. It's just a blended whiskey, very simple. This was given to me as a gift as a Christmas gift. And it's... I mean, I think this isn't your basic Doors, but it's pretty close. It's a blend of 12-year-aged whiskeys. I mean, everybody knows about Doors. I'm not going to go into too much of the detail because, A, I'm not really prepared to do so, and, B, I don't think anybody – I mean, people know – you guys know what Doors is. It's probably the first scotch most of us have had. This one, it's like I said, it's a blend of 12-year-aged whiskeys, and I actually kind of like the bottle. It's got some kind of fancy pants stuff. It's got two labels
it is,
on it.
I like the label at the bottom. It makes it look more official.
Yeah, it's – and, you know, it's – it is what it is. It's Doors. It's 40. It's 40%. So it's 80 proof. And this was given to me as a gift at Christmas. It was either this year or last year, and I'm like right here. So I haven't had much of this bottle. It's one of those bottles that sits in my bar, and I kind of just forget that I have it. You know, you always have that stuff that you forget that you have. We were actually going on vacation, and I wanted to move some of my nicer stuff out of the bar because I didn't want my mom coming over and like hanging out and raging on all of our good booze. So I hid a lot of that in the back room, and there was a lot of stuff in my bar that I had that I didn't even realize I had. So that was kind of fun. But anyway, this is my first pairing. I love this cigar. I'm a fan of this this blended scotch. It's simple. It's easy to drink. It's just like a good everyday scotch. So. That's where I decided to go. I decided to go kind of everyman pairings here.
Tony, as a tasting expert, what do you got going on your end there?
I started with the Treasure Hunter, Sawyer's Crown. It's a Red Mountain Cabernet from Washington State. Hunter and Andrew, the owners of Treasure Hunter, also my partners in La Barba, as well as a new project we were doing, which is a Cava, which I'm going to get to later.
Nice.
Their concept's pretty cool. It was basically the motivation that we had to start the Lost and Found stuff that Robert and I do. Basically, wineries, what they do is they'll make wine from however many grapes they get that year. But high-end wineries like Camus or Silver Oak or any of these big high-end wineries, they limit their amount, their case production, which makes sense because they want to keep their price point where it's at. But they have leftover wine at the end of the whole process because they're going to make it regardless. So in a nutshell, what Hunter does is he'll go approach these wineries and say, you know, do you have any extra wine? Sign a non-disclosure. You know, we're not going to tell anybody where it comes from. You know, limited release quantities. So this one I think was 250 cases that they could find. Some are 100 cases. Some are 600 cases. I mean, it all depends on how much they get. So they're constantly coming out with new stuff. There's never, you know, I've had the same Treasure Hunter more than once, but in 3 months, there's going to be something new. So it's always exciting to just pick a bottle and not know what it is, pull it off the shelf and open it up. And they're all, so they buy the juice for pennies on the dollar, and you're looking at, you know, most states, $20, $24.99 retail. This wine, most of them are ready to drink. Some of them can age. This one I'm tasting now is pretty big. You know, generally it's pretty hard to pair wine and cigars just because wine's so much more delicate. You know, when you have this big scotches or even port stuff that with the higher ABV or beer with the amount of flavor, you know, it's easier to pair. It's pretty tough to pair wine with cigars, but. I tend to think a big Washington State cab with a bunch of tannin, very young, kind of stands up to the smoke. And I am smoking a La Barba Purple Robusto myself. I was contemplating these new Tatawai Skinny Monsters. I'm going to get to those later. I've just picked up my box today. So that's what I got going on right now.
Nice. So you're talking about wine pairing. Do you find you typically find that most cigars will run over wines, or do you find vice versa that most wines run over cigars?
Most of the time, I find that cigars will run right over a wine. You know, like we were talking earlier, I'm smoking lighter and lighter and lighter stuff, and I'm drinking lighter and lighter stuff. For some reason, I don't know why my palate shifted in that direction, but even my food choices are I'm not eating a lot of spice. I'm not eating a lot of sweet. I don't know if my palate's getting more sensitive or what's going on, but you know, as you smoke the La Barba Red versus the Purple, I mean, it's so much of more of a full bodied cigar than the Purple. And it just, cause I think my palate's shifting into like this lighter, you know, I hate to say it, but, my palate's getting very feminine. You know, I'm drinking a lot of Pinot Noir. I'm smoking a lot of Connecticut. And even some Connecticuts, you know, like Epernay or those fuller bodied Connecticuts will really stomp over a wine. So you really got to choose something that has a lot of gusto to stand up to some of these cigars.
Well, I'm definitely not having any issue with the La Barba Purple and the Glamorangie. In fact, they're a great counterpoint because I'm getting just a really great rich spice off of La Barba, a little bit of pepper, this sort of cedar quality to it. And it's a perfect counterpoint to Glenmorangie because this Glenmorangie is a lot of honey. It's got some floral characteristics, which normally I'm not a huge fan of floral, both in my cigars and my whiskey. But if I'm balancing that against something that's got some spice, it kind of plays off of each other. So hopefully the rest of my pairings are good. Otherwise, I'm going to come back to this Glenmorangie because, you know, like I said, so far so good. I'm really, really enjoying this so far. Just a reminder to our audience that you're tuning into Sharing Our Pairings episode 69 with special guest Tony Bellotto, La Barba 2.0. I'm your host, John the Cigar Surgeon, joined by my co-host, Robbie Rass. We are heard around the world on the Cigar Federation Network and, of course, on the Armed Forces Radio Network. Appreciate all of you, wherever you are stationed in the world. Thanks for tuning in. Robbie, how's that first pairing going for you, brother?
It's going surprisingly well, actually. so I looked up, I tried to find a little more information on this Dewars. It's the 12-year special reserve, and it runs $25 a bottle. So it's kind of tough to beat that.
That's
when,
value.
Yeah, I mean, we've talked about value stuff before, especially in bourbon. We talk about, you know, things like Elijah Craig, which is one that we both enjoy, and right around the same price point. Is it going to stand up to, you know, some of the scotches that we've had on this show? I mean, we've been lucky enough to taste some really, really good stuff. No, it's not. You're not playing the same ball game, but there's still a place. At least I'll speak for my bar. There's still a place in my bar for this type of scotch, and it's going really well with the cigar. It's bringing out a nice. I'm getting a nice spice from the scotch. And it's bringing out some more spice in the cigar as well. That kind of rich undertone that Jericho Hill is known for. And again, I feel remiss that I'm not smoking a La Barba, but I know I have a couple of reds somewhere, but I couldn't find them. And that would have been fun to crack one of those out next time when we have you on for La Barba 4.0. I'll break one of those out, but I didn't have a chance to find that one this morning. But this pairing's off to a pretty good start, man. It's I'm not, you know, blown away by it. I don't feel like it's really elevating the cigar. I feel like it's elevating the scotch a little bit more. I'm getting more nuance out of that scotch. Because it's one thing, you go with a blended scotch for $25, you're not going to get a ton of nuance out of it. But it's bringing out some spice, and the cigar is pairing pretty well with it. I'm pretty happy so far.
Now, I think, to be fair, most blended scotches, you would not expect an age statement. I mean, almost entirely across the spectrum of blended scotch is going to be no age statement. So to have a 12-year age statement on a blended scotch is actually pretty impressive, and especially at that price point.
Yeah, I mean, for $25, you know, if you didn't want something like this in your bar, obviously you'll just skip it anyway. I know there were some comments in the chat room, you know, some guys could just, you know, do without their Dewars, and that's fine. It's not for everybody, but I mean, for me, it's fine.
What is, I since I have a bar, my prices are all screwed up. What do 12-year bourbons usually run? I think they're like 50, right? For a start, like Eagle Rare 12 or some of those bourbons are pretty expensive for a 12-year. I mean,
yeah,
you can, yeah.
Yeah, 12-year, I know like Eagle Rare was one that you mentioned. I think Bullet does a 10-year, and that's about $50 or $60. I'm trying to think.
Elijah Craig has a 12-year that's around the $54 mark, $58 mark.
If you can still find the 12-year.
Right.
Would you put
this Dewar's up against those $50, $60 bottles of bourbon? I mean, you think that they're comparable, or do you think, you know, because I haven't had Dewar's since I was since I stole it from my grandpa when I was like 12.
No, seriously. And I hadn't either. We had, my father-in-law likes scotch, and if it's just a regular day, he's just going to have just a regular scotch. And he's kind of a Johnny Walker Red guy. And when he was coming to visit, this was a couple years ago, we bought a handle of Dewar's White. And that's like the white label is the basic of basic from Dewar's. And I mean, it is what it is. It's fine, but, you know, whatever. This is light years beyond that. Again, that was the only time I had Dewar's, and this was given to me as a gift. And then another one, and it's got a blue label, and I think it's a 16 or a 14 of blended, which is also only, it's less than $40. And it was still pretty good. I mean, as far as comparing this to those, I don't know if that's a fair comparison. I'd be more willing to compare it to a basic Eagle Rare without an age statement that runs around the same price, or a Bullet that doesn't have the age statement that runs around the same price. That's kind of where I would be. Or even the Elijah Craig. Obviously, the flavor profile is going to be different, but I mean, at least as far as I'm concerned, as far as quality and depth of flavor and things like that, yeah, they're definitely comparable in that price range, sure.
Yeah, I think for me, talking about bourbons and bourbons with a nice age statement, you know, really for me, anything in a bourbon that's an 8-year plus, I consider to be a great age statement, because most bourbons out there are not going to be aged. They're going to be the 3 to 5 year range typically. And for me, and I'll drink everything, I would put up the typical 8-year plus bourbons with the 15-year plus scotches, because to me, you know, the complexity is there on some of the more aged bourbons, and to me that's the fair comparison. So you start looking at the price point of a 8 or 10 year or 12 year bourbon and start comparing that to a 15 or 18 scotch, well, typically the bourbon's gonna come in, at least now, at half the price, which is, that's a pretty good value statement.
Right. Yeah, and looking here, just looking up some prices, if you jump to like a Glenfiddich or a Glenlivet 12, you know, it's $10 more. So it just depends on what your budget is for the bar and what you want to have. Would I pay the extra $10 to jump up to Glenfiddich or Glenlivet? Probably. John's turned me into a snob, man. So yeah, I would definitely go the extra mile. But like I said, there's a spot in my bar for this type of stuff. There is like an outline in my bar that fits an Elijah Craig bottle, and there will always be a bottle of it there. And that's a $24 bourbon that when I go to BevMo to buy it, it's on the bottom shelf. This isn't top shelf stuff, but I like it, so it's always going to be in my bar. And something like this, like I said, it was a gift and I enjoy it, and I was happy to get the gift and I'm happy to drink it. Would I run out to buy another bottle? Probably not, but I have it here. I'll drink it and I'll enjoy it.
Awesome.
What's funny is I didn't go with wine tonight, and part of that was a price point. And it's a little ironic because, you know, I can probably get some half decent, depending on your qualities, but half decent red wines for, you know, 10, 12, 15 bucks. And when I start thinking about the amount that I've been spending on beers for some of our beer shows, it's kind of comparable. Like, I could easily get 3 red wines that would be comparable to some of the huge bombers of beer that I've been getting, and probably be around the same price point. I think the Scott in me says, when I open a wine, of course I got to finish it, and I don't drink wine every night. I'll have wine a couple times a week, like during the week, with meals. But I don't know. I mean, what are your thoughts on that, Tony? Because I mean, that's my struggle. Is every time I open a bottle of wine, you got to finish it, and I, you know, the Scott in me doesn't want to waste it.
Well, you know, it's funny because I drink wine every night. I rarely drink beer anymore, just because for some reason, like, hops have been making me really sick. You know, I don't know what it is, but, you know, like, the hoppier the beer, like, I get really bad indigestion. I just don't feel, like, I can have one or two. You know, like, last night I had a North Coast Grimshaw Pilsner. I had two of them, and I was fine. But with these IPAs, and I don't know what happened, like, out of nowhere, I just started to get, like, I get really full, and then I don't feel good. Anyway, that's here nor there. So I've been drinking wine every night, and I've noticed a lot of these wines from California are starting to get a ton of fruit. They're really big, fruit forward. You know, they're jammy, and they're too over the top for me. You know, I like big, bold. You know, I'm a classic. I love classic French wines, Italian wines, and I love Washington State stuff. But I was talking to my dad, and he likes to have one glass a night, and he gets really nervous after like 3 days of the bottle being open. And I'll leave mine open for a week, and with these big Napas, they'll just get better for over a week.
Interesting. You
know, and then even at the even at my bar, you know, we glass pour wines, and I'll go in every day and I'll taste through and I'll smell them to make sure, you know, they're okay. And I don't gas them or anything, and they hold up for a week. And I mean, if it doesn't take me usually a week to drink a bottle of wine, it usually takes me a night. But if it has to take me, the second bottle of wine sometimes takes me a couple of days. But honestly, I think that they're just so big anymore that they actually get better over a period of a week, which is kind of weird to say. They just don't oxidize like they used to. I don't know. But as far as value is concerned, you know, when we did this, we decided to do this Kappa project, which I'm going to do later on. You know, I was so tired. I love bubbles. Like, that's my number one thing of everything else. I love sparkling wine. And I was so tired of paying, like, you know, me and my buddy Nick on New Year's, the two of us in our 2 dates, we drank a case of bubbles.
Wow.
On New Year's.
Damn, son.
Yeah.
Get raging. Right.
So, I mean, and that's 3 bottles per person.
That's aggressive.
And, right. And the girls didn't drink as much as we did. But anyway, you know, we're like, you know, a case of champagne, if you bought champagne from Epernay, France, a case of champagne is $50 a bottle. So you're looking at $600 for the case. You know what I mean? Like, that's aggressive.
It's real money.
And so I kept, and I would go to these, you know, when I go to Miami to visit Rob for the cigar stuff, we would go out. I'd want to get a bottle of bubbles, and Miami prices, you know, you're paying $150 for a $10 wine. So when I approached Hunter and Andrew about this project, they said, let's do something that everybody can afford, because bubbles shouldn't be it shouldn't be something that's so out of reach that, you know, you go to a restaurant and it's $300 for a bottle. You know, you could get the quality. And that's the reason why we chose Spain. And my what I was gonna tell you is if you could pick up Spanish wines for $10 a bottle, they'll knock your socks off. And for whatever reason, you know, wines from Spain and wines from Portugal are very good and very inexpensive. Like the Arcava comes in retail at a retail store is $14.99, and it's done in traditional method, just the same exact way champagne is done. It's 100% Pinot Noir. I'll talk about it later, but you know, the point is there's stuff out there, like we're talking about with this Dewars, that you can get that is just ready to drink. You know, what else is there's time for 20-year-old whiskeys and, you know, bottles of Cristal or vintage champagnes, but there's also times where you just want to sit on your porch with your buddies, smoke a cigar and drink and not think. And that's what I think is cool about doing those two things. It's very special sometimes, but sometimes the occasion is more special than what you're actually drinking or opening.
Well, I think for La Barba 3.0, we're going to have to get some Spanish or Portugal wines and just rage on our next show. I think that's...
Yeah, I'm in.
Yeah. Perfect. I'm in too. So speaking of 20-year-old whiskey, that was a great segue, Tony. I really didn't intend to bring this out, but this is kind of one of my favorites. This is one of the special cask bottling. So a lot of times, and I'm sure this happens a lot in the wine industry, where a large enough supplier will go out and they'll just buy a cask. And this is what happened here. This is from Willow Park Wines and Spirits. This goes back a few years. This is bottle 87 of 572. So essentially they bought up the barrel. I like this for a number of reasons. One, you can see the color, and this is not colored. That I mean, you can guess what cask that was in. That was an Oloroso Sherry. And I mean, that was in Oloroso Sherry for 20 years. I mean, that is just blood red.
That is sexy.
It's cask strength, 60.4%. So, I mean, as Bill Burr would say, this is a Hita. You just get so much sherry for it. It's almost too much sherry, actually, maybe with the La Barba.
No such thing.
But what I'm finding with La Barba is that the initial sherry peppery notes are kind of running the cigar over, and then I take a retrohale of La Barba and I get so much creaminess that it's coming back. So I'm taking almost two or three puffs for every sip of the dram, because the dram is just so full in my face. But I'm gonna take some more sips here and let this settle in, and Robbie's gonna talk about his second pairing here. And I think you're going beer in your second one, aren't you?
No, man, I'm going bourbon. And it's weird. You went full on 20-year this and 30-year that, and I went just real basic Buffalo Trace, because I think this is something that is in a lot of people's bars, like we were talking about. This is a good mid-range bottle of bourbon. It is. I just looked up the pricing here on BevMo, and $25.99 is what it's on sale for. So, John, you adjusted my volume. I'm coming in a little hot there. I apologize.
Coming in quiet, actually.
Oh, really? Oh, I apologize. Oh, I'll speak up. So Buffalo Trace. I mean, everybody knows about Buffalo Trace. Again, not going to go into all the detail, but I just got off a couple of sips, and the difference between something like a Buffalo Trace bourbon and a Dour's blended scotch is the spice. This is so much more spicy. So much more spicy coming out of this Buffalo Trace. And this is a really solid, I think I'm looking at BevMo pricing. So their Club Bev, which is, you know, their club membership or whatever, it's $25, but it's regularly $33. So it's kind of right in that range. And
Club Bev sounds like kind of like a weird gentleman's club in like Omaha.
Yeah, it's like Club Med, but a little bit different. I don't know. Yeah, everybody just goes there and gets hammered. I don't know. It sounds awesome, actually. We should set that up. No, it's like they're buy. It's you don't pay to get into. It's like when you go to Safeway, you've got your club card. It's the same thing. And they always try to get you to sign up for it and send you stuff in the mail and whatever. But Buffalo Trace for me, it's one of these bourbons that I like to have because it is. It's a little bit more spicy than something like we talked about Eagle Rare or even Elijah Craig. It's on a different, it's kind of on a different flavor spectrum for me. It's got that spice. It's got some earthy notes to it, and that is actually going really, really well. And it's bringing out a lot more sweetness in the Jericho Hill, which is what I kind of expected, because this is a cigar that I get a lot of that dry cocoa flavor. We've talked about this cigar a lot, John, which is I think why I grabbed it when I saw it. And this pairing is really interesting because the Buffalo Trace is so spicy by comparison to what I was drinking before and what I'm drinking now, but it's almost like, you know, when you have one of those atomic red hots and the way it leaves your tongue, it just kind of burns your tongue. Like I'm kind of going through that right now. So I'm hoping that, that I can recover from this, cause I know it's not always as spicy, but,
you get some Fireball in there or when you're,
yeah, exactly. Right. Yeah. Fireball. I should have brought some Fireball in too. That would have been fun. But I've got a bottle of that too. If you mix Fireball with apple ciders, hard cider.
Oh, okay.
It's good.
A cinnamon stick.
Yeah, I don't know what they call it, like a cinnamon bun, or I don't know. There's a name for it, but it's quite good. We've got some pretty good ciders. I'm not a big cider guy. My wife likes the cider, and we have a bottle of that Fireball just for that. And I think she made some like. Some Fireball Jello shots for our Halloween party or something to that effect. I don't know. But anyway, the pairing is okay so far. I'm hoping the spice will calm down as we move forward. And John, I'm jealous of what you've got. And I actually had a bourbon, and I texted you, John, or I messaged you about it. I want to get into it a little bit later, but this is a bourbon that I got to track down or you're going to enjoy it. But we can talk about that later. But my pairing so far is okay. We'll see how it goes.
I'll definitely have some of the samples of this Tomatin to bring down with me to the IPCPR. This, mm-hmm. I think we're in the same wheelhouse when we're talking about this, because this is almost, like I said, I think your description actually describes my scotch really well, because it's almost overpowering sherry, pepper, spice. Like my tongue is just on fire between draws, and ironically, it's the cigar that's bringing my palate back between between sips. So, Tony, what do you got going on for your? Do you have a second wine there?
I do, but I have to go get it because it's in the refrigerator, and that's too far for me. So, if you guys want to talk amongst yourselves, we'll be back in like 2 seconds.
Sounds
perfect.
Cool.
Go ahead, John. I'll let you go.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, you know me. I love. I mean, this is we talk about sherry bombs, and this is. sherry has its place for whiskeys. I mean, I drink everything. I drink the Glenmorangie. I'll drink a light Glenfarclas. I'll drink a really peated Ardbeg. I like everything. Everything's got its place. I don't know if tonight was the night for this Tamon. This is probably one of my favorite bottles I've got in my collection in terms of being a spice bomb. The Amrit from India is sort of in the same category. This is a little bit more rich, and you really got to take a sip and sort of recover from it because it's just so in your face. It's just, when I did a vertical, Tomatin Distillery manager came out and did a vertical of the entire range. And I actually found this 20-year cask strength to be better than the 30-year. Just because it was cask strength, it was so delicious. But maybe we can get back to Tony and talk about wine here.
Yeah, I'm back. Okay, so here's the new cava that we're doing. It's called Viva la Vida, which means live your life in Spanish. Again, the reason why we did it is because we were tired of paying so much money for some of these wines. So, I mean, it's not a budget wine by any means. Drinks like a $50 bottle. I'm obviously saying that because it's mine, but that's what we think. And that was the goal behind it. And when we started blending different Pinot Noirs, you know, that's what we decided to do. And there's not that many 100% Pinot Noir cavas from Spain. Cava is Spanish for cave. And when Champagne, Epernay in Champagne, France, decided that they were the only ones that could be called Champagne, which they have every right to do so, because it's like having a, I don't know, it's like calling me a Californian when I'm from Ohio. So the Spanish decided to name their sparkling offering Cava, which means cave. We started blending this about 4 years ago. I've been getting samples sent over for 4 years trying to get this right, playing with different sugar levels, playing with different maceration times. This one sits 8 hours on the skins. It's an 8-hour maceration, so you notice it gets that real bright, vibrant, almost cranberry juice color. Let me get a light behind it. But yeah, I mean, it's pretty, I don't know if you could see it, maybe like that. Okay.
You can actually see it better without the light. There you go.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely get the cranberry color for sure.
So this is done traditional method, which that's the thing that you're allowed to keep when you make a sparkling wine in another place other than Champagne, is called method Champenois, which basically means that, and it's certified thing. We got these little seals that certify it. It is fermented, secondary fermentation is in bottle. It's 100%, like I said, Pinot Noir. We don't add any color to it. A lot of people will fill the top third up with still Pinot Noir. Just a different way of doing things. We decided not to do it. We're playing around 5 to 11 grams per liter of sugar. We ended up at 7. So it's on the drier spectrum of sparkling wines. You call it a Brut Rosé. And like I said, secondary fermentation is in bottle, and then they're riddled, and they're the tops are frozen. The yeast is shut out the top, and some wine is added. It's called liquor de triage, or not liquor de triage. It's dosage is the second one to the top to complete it with a little bit of unfermented Pinot Noir. So. That being said, we also designed it to have a lot of flavor. I wanted it to stand up with cigars because I don't have a lot of sparkling wines that can really stand up to cigars. This has really sharp, really racy acidity. It's got a ton of fruit, so you're looking at cranberry, strawberry, a ton of those bright red fruits. But the finish is very, very, very short. And that has to do with the acidity that we chose, the maceration time. With that, the sitting on the skins builds your body in acidity. We wanted the wine to start off really strong and then stop, so that whatever you're enjoying, you could continue to enjoy, but you still have that, oh, I had the cherry, I had the strawberry, I had the raspberry, I had the cranberry. Now I'm going to, you know, have something maybe spicy or something maybe savory, and then I could go back to this wine later on and drink it the rest of the night on the patio with the cigar. So with, especially with the La Barbone, we have Habano Alto Baja Seco, and like you said earlier, it's a very creamy tobacco. So with this, you know, you're mixing that acidic, real acidic, real sharp nature of the wine, and then you have a short finish, and then the creamy and spicy of the cigar that really round it out. So it's weird to say that it's not very masculine to pair a sparkling rosé with a cigar, but if you own it, then you're solid, and that's where I stand.
Well, and I mean, you know, I think our underlying philosophy in the show has been drink what you like and pair what you like. And, you know, ultimately, if someone's going to judge you for that, they're the douche. You're not the douche. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of my thought. I mean, if it's tasty, it's tasty. And I mean, I'm certainly not qualified enough to be judging people based on their wine pairing and their cigar pairing. Not by a long shot. That's for sure.
I don't think anybody's qualified enough to tell me what I like and what I don't like.
There you go. Except maybe Dana.
Yeah, that's your story.
There you go. So
Dana is my wife. She's the one qualified to tell me what I like and don't like. Occasionally. Just occasionally.
So, Tony, that actually lends ourselves right into a perfect audience question here from Bob Dog. And Bob Dog has a question around Pinots, and he wants to know, you know, typically what would you recommend as a cigar? And I'm going to expand that question. What would you recommend as a profile for blending with Pinots from the cigar spectrum?
Pairing.
Pairing or blending?
All right. Pairing.
So Pinot Noir is, like we were talking, I think, before the show, you know, Pinot Noir is one of my favorite grapes. And I like it because it is very feminine in nature. And, you know, there's a distinguishable thing between masculine and feminine wines. So Pinot Noir, Chardonnay are very feminine, but like Sauvignon Blanc and Cabernet are very masculine wines. So white wine can still be a masculine wine because of its full-bodied in nature. So that being said, when you're doing stuff with Pinot Noir, you know, depending on the area, you know, so Burgundy, in France, you're going to have a lot more mineral content. You're going to have a lot more of that stinky, barnyardy, chewy, real aggressive Pinot Noir that can last forever. So with those Burgundies, that would be the biggest cigar I would go. So I would say, you know, like something like what Rob's smoking right now wouldn't go with, I don't think, many wines. You know, that San Andres is a big, big wrapper. It's a big, spicy cigar. I mean, at that point, you would just be drinking wine to get drunk, which is fine. but, you know, I don't think you'd be able to taste much. So I would stick with something a little bit, you know, on the lighter side of things, like an Epernay, you know, that Cafe Rosado wrapper. Not a lot of Lajero. So stick with something like, you know, maybe even you could do a Connecticut Broadleaf as long as there's not a lot of Lajero in there. You just don't want a lot of spice. California, you're obviously going to be fruit forward. You have a lot more to play around with California because you're going to have a little bit of that residual sweetness, a little bit more of that jammy, you know, kind of cloying. Like the body is a little bit fuller on California Pinots, so you're going to have that like chewy fruit. So you can get away with a spicier cigar with that because I think the spicy and the sweet fruit will go well. And then on your Washington State and Oregon State stuff, that's kind of a blend between both. So I would stick right down the middle with a medium bodied. Pretty much La Barba Purple goes good with everything. So that's what I would say to do personally.
There you go.
And I mean, I'd have to obviously echo that sentiment. As my taste buds have gotten acclimated to this super spicy tomatin, I'm surprised that La Barba's just hanging in there. You know, as my profile is kind of getting used to the spice of that sherry, the cigar's still holding up, which is surprising because I have found that a lot of sherry bomb whiskeys are tough to pair. That spice is really tough to balance because it can just dominate your palate. But this La Barba is really sticking in. Now, my last pairing here, I think, is going to be a bit of a test because I've gone a little crazy. I've gone with some might call a bit of a peat bomb. This is the Port Charlotte from Buchlaudy, the Antaras Moor, which they call a heavily peated, but Buchlaudy tends to go with, you know, what they call heavily peated, but it's not peat forward. So it's very balanced out with the rest of the flavor profiles. And I think it's going to be a real test because I tend to find that, you know, if this La Barba went really well with the Glenmorangie and it went really well with the Tomatin, the peat might run it over. So I'm going to take some sips here while Rob talks about his last and best pairing.
Maybe. We'll see. I actually went back while you were talking, and I did I reviewed the purple back before. I titled the review exclusive pre-release, so Tony, you must have given us an exclusive on that one.
That's how much I like you guys.
That's awesome. No, I'm going back and I'm looking at it, and I reviewed the Robusto size, and I love that cigar, which is why I don't have any more left, and I need to pick up a few more, but yeah, looking at the blend profile and the flavors that I got out of it, the way that you described it and throwing it in with a California Pinot, which my wife and I have actually been drinking a lot of lately. It took me a while to come around on Pinot, California Pinots anyway, frankly. And now that I've come around on it, it's something that I really do enjoy. And that profile, I feel like, really would pair really, really well. And I'm intrigued with this cava. And we're going to talk offline because it sounds like something I'm going to want to buy a case of and put it in the old fridge back here. Because Dana loves the sparkling. She loves it. Wherever we go, we got to get the sparkling. So if I can find a sparkling, that's going to be good and not going to break my bank. That's a good thing. So anyway, my last pairing, but I digress. My last pairing here. I was going to go. I cracked open some of the beers that I bottled before I left on vacation. And I opened up my Smash Pale Ale, and it was really, really good. I was very happy. I was very surprised that it actually tasted like beer and kind of tasted the way it was supposed to taste, as much as I screwed it up. So I thought, I'll crack open one of my chocolate milk stouts today, too. It's not ready. So we're going to wait a couple more weeks for that. So I changed gears and went with one from Modern Times, City of the Dead, and this is a coffee... That's a coffee stout, and they actually age their coffee beans in bourbon barrels. They make their own coffee beans, and they age the beans in barrels, not the beer, but the beans. This is the best coffee stout I've ever had, so I'm very, very curious to see how this is going to go, and I know we're running short on time, and I got to stop blabbering, but I'm going to jump into it, and John, hopefully you have something to say about your pairing while I get into mine.
Well, I do, but I want to hear Tony's thoughts on how that cava is going because, you know, we made you go and fetch the bottle and crack it. And how's that going?
That's great. You know, I haven't really had the opportunity to sit down and smoke as much as I want to anymore. And it's unfortunate because I'm always on the run. So it's nice to sit down and talk, you know, with people like Minerly. So thank you for that. But, you know, again, that I really am enjoying the fact that you can reset yourself with this cava. You know, you take a sip, you get the fruit, and you taste the cigar, you retro it, you get the spice, and then when you go back, then the cava is gone, and it takes that. If you take a sip of the cava after you take a draw of the cigar, then it kind of wipes your palate and lets you go back and start over again. You don't get too involved. You know, a lot of big, like big beers and big scotches and big wines, like you start to go down this tunnel where the cigar is increasing, the beer or the whiskey is increasing, and it gets more and more and more and more and more. And all of a sudden you're like, you know, you got like purple or chocolate stout in the corner of your mouth, and you're, you know, you're doing this thing, and you're just so like overwhelmed with flavor that, that's a cool journey in itself, but the other cool journey is to have that reset, you know, so I can taste the second third of this cigar and say, okay, well, even though I'm drinking with it, it's like a brand new cigar because it's kind of resets my palate and kind of wiped it, the bubbles have kind of wiped it clean, which is cool to do with, which I think is cool to do champagne with cigars that way, personally.
I mean, the way you describe it has me pretty excited to try that out. If I can get my hands on it, maybe Robbie can hook me up. But
I'm probably going to have a case or two under the old table at the trade show, if you know what I mean.
I do know what you mean. It sounds like a great portion of the B-roll that we're going to probably set up for the IPCPR in Las Vegas. But I mean, I love fruit forward and I love sparkling. And I think, you know, a lot of people's experience with sparkling is, you know, they try the stupid duck at New Year's and then they think they hate sparkling wine, sparkling right. Champagne. But, you know, I've come to learn that what is common and what is readily available isn't necessarily what's good. So I've certainly been trying to expand my palate when it comes to wine, and that cava, the flavor descriptions that you give sound right in my wheelhouse. So I'm looking forward to that. That'll be interesting. Talking a little bit about this Antares more, I was surprised. It's got a lot of oiliness to it, which I think helps offset the peat with the La Barba Purple. I think I wouldn't go with something really peaty like a Laphroaig or a Lagavulin, because I think that would probably overwhelm the nuances in the cigar. But this is actually going really well because the oil from the whiskey offsets the peat, which, you know, again, the creaminess from the cigar and the cedar from the cigar and the spices from the cigar still battle against the power of the peat. So this, you know, even though they say this is heavily peated, it's balanced. And when you have something that's balanced, it's not just shocking your palate. And it's going really well. In fact, I think it's going better than the Tomatin, which was just a complete sherry bomb for me. How's that last pairing going for you, Rob?
The coffee and the earth from the beer, the spice and the chocolate from the cigar. It's a beautiful thing. This is the type of pairing, Tony, that you were just talking about. It keeps getting more and more and more. And at the end, I need some water because, like, you know, it's, but I like that. Would I be able to sit here and do a full bomber and, you know, probably two of these Lanceros to get through that full bomber? That might be a little aggressive, but it is fantastic. I will say, though, I think my favorite pairing of the night was the Dours. Something about it flowed nicely. It surprised me, too, and it's, I expected, and maybe it's just because my expectation was different, I expected the City of the Dead to pair fantastically, and it really is. And I didn't expect much from the Dours, but it paired really well. So I'd probably have to, maybe, you know, the City of the Dead's probably my favorite. Modern Times, seriously, if you're a beer fan, and you've heard me wax poetic about them a lot, if you get your hands on any other stuff, everything I've had from Modern Times has been great. And
what's
they are now...
They're not in Ohio. Where are they located?
They're in San Diego. So I mean that's a look there. They just started distributing while I was on vacation to the East Bay. So they've been distributing to San Francisco, which is where I've been getting most of my beer from. But they're now available for me locally, and they do some really really fun stuff. Really cool. They have like mini releases that come out every month. We're running out of time. We can talk more in the After Dark about them, but. I'm a big fan of what they're doing. And I just like the look. It has a cool feel to it. It just seems like a really fun company. And they make their own coffee, too, which I haven't had yet. But when you age it in bourbon barrels and you mix it in their stout, it's pretty damn good.
So, Tony, for the cava, where are people going to be able to pick that up? Can you tell our audience where they'd be able to find some of that?
Right now we're in 10 states, roughly. So we're in Ohio, Indiana, Michigan, North Carolina, South Carolina, cool. Montana, Colorado. I can't think. We're working on DC, Maryland area, Florida, but you could go to, if you just go to vivalavidawines.com, you can order a case directly from us. We keep it the suggested retail price, state minimum pricing on the website as well. You know, sometimes it's easier for people just to order it online because they can't get to a shop. And, you know, we only made 560 cases initially. So, you know, it's not going to be too readily available. But we have some distributors that are behind it. I'm really pumping it in Ohio. I'm going to start to pump it in Florida. And then I got my partners that are kind of traveling now for it to kind of push it other places. But, yeah, we're on Instagram, Facebook, the whole nine yards with it. The website's really cool. And then you can order direct through Three Finger Wines is the name of the company that does Treasure Hunter, Viva La Vida. They're doing a rum now called Drunken Sailor, and they're doing a gin called Grey Jade Gin, which is done with Earl Grey tea, which is pretty cool.
Interesting.
So they have some cool stuff coming out. I'm going to keep working on this cava thing, and I'm going to try to do some other wines too, which will be fun in the future here. So. Stoop.
Nice. So maybe tell our audience a little bit about, you know, bring you back to cigars for a moment. Where can people find more about La Barba and contact you on social media?
Everything. You can get me on Facebook, Tony Bellotto. It's Bellatto. You should just send me a message. I'm always on there. Instagram, it's at Bellotto, Bellatto. La Barba, we just did. We're kind of in a transition period where my demand for the cigar was out without matching the supply. So I approached a really good friend of mine, Robert Caldwell, who's done a couple projects with me. He's going to start to handle all the distribution and fulfillment for me, which is really nice. So I can stop actually physically packing up boxes myself and actually get out on the road and instead of doing like every part of it. So he's going to handle all the importing for me, and he's going to do all that to free me up to kind of get the cigars in people's hands. And we're going to do, you know, instead of producing, you know, 10 or 20,000 cigars at a time, we're going to produce 30 or 40, maybe 50, and then that'll give me an opportunity to even more focus on the quality and get out to the shops. But right now I'm kind of out of stuff. The only stuff I have left is what's in my basement, and whatever shops have. So Cigar Federation, I don't know if you guys have any left, but I'm hoping that after the show, Logo's going to get a hold of me and pick up some more, because I have enough to get you guys through. So that's the IPCPR. I'm redoing the whole line as far as aesthetically. The boxes are going to be better. The bands are going to be even better. We're going to try to release something new by then if the FDR doesn't, or the FDA doesn't, FDR. The FDA doesn't come knocking on my door here pretty soon, so we'll see what happens. But that's the scoop.
I can pretty much guarantee that Logan will be all over that, because he loves carrying boutique stuff through the Cigar Federation store. And that's as a Canadian, that's how I get a lot of my stuff through the Underground Railway. So
To chime in, I happened to just look, and again, John and I get nothing out of this if you guys buy from the store, but it looks like they have some purple and they have the Siempre in stock as well.
Siempre is good. Connecticut, Ecuadorian Connecticut wrapper with 40% Lajero. It's a cigar smoker's Connecticut. My dad and I did that because we were tired of smoking La Barba purples. We smoked them. We were in the DR and we were just smoking when I was blending them. We were smoking like 11 a day, different, like 1% more Lajero, 2% more all of the bomb. He's like, he told Henderson, he's like, can you just make me a cigar that I can smoke and not think about? Like we were talking, like just something good that I can smoke, because I'm so tired, my palate's so blown out, I'm so tired. That was the birth of that. So
that's funny. Yeah, so it looks like they do still have some. And this Yampere starts at $4, so I haven't smoked that yet. I'll have to track some of those down.
Yeah, I haven't smoked any of those either. I gotta check that out.
Yeah, that was the other purpose of releasing those. It's like we could get them done inexpensively. Yampere means always in Spanish, and we wanted something you could smoke all the time that had flavor, that had body, but you didn't get sick of just smoking 12 or 13 of them a day. It's a grass cutter, you know.
Ooh.
Giddy up. So that brings us to the end of our Armed Forces Radio Network segment. As Rob always says, thanks to all our Armed Forces Radio Network listeners out there keeping us safe wherever you're stationed in the world. Hope you have a chance to enjoy a cigar. Make it a La Barba today. And if you have a chance to pair with wine, I don't think you do, but if you do, enjoy it. And as we say on Sharing Our Pairings, drink better, but drink less. And we're back. So we're still live, broadcast live around the world and picked up on podcast, but now we're not censored by the FTC, so we can say whatever.
Or the FDR.
FDR.
FDR is not.
Fucking FDR.
So you can say shit, bitch, cockballs, all that stuff. It's fun. So what was I was – okay, so I have to talk about this bourbon. So just bear with me for a second. So my wife and I were in – we did a long trip. We went to North Carolina and did some family stuff, and then we took the train up to D.C. and, you know, tooled around D.C. for a while, which was a blast. D.C. is an awesome, awesome town. We had a great time. I loved it. We were actually, like, looking at, like, housing prices and stuff because we loved it there. And we actually stayed in Virginia, but just across. We were, like, right next to Georgetown, right next to D.C. We had a great time. And we went to a restaurant called Pennsylvania 9 and had dinner. And they had foie gras, which my wife was really excited about. Some people have an issue with foie gras because of the way they do it. I just think it tastes fantastic, and I try not to think about it. But I'm looking at their bar menu, and they have some bourbons on there that I didn't recognize, some local stuff, and always trying to try the local stuff, beer, bourbon, whatever it is. And they had one called Bell Mead. It was BelleMeade. And it was finished in a sherry cask. And I've never had bourbon finished that was finished in a sherry cask. So I ordered it, and it was like $14 a pour. So it wasn't cheap, but it wasn't horribly expensive. And I was blown away. I have to find a bottle of this stuff. Bell Mead sherry cask. It was fantastic. John, I think you'd love it.
It was local from Virginia?
I asked the server, and he didn't really know. And then the bartender like brought the bottle over and was like, hey, here, if you want to try it. I was like, well, I already bought it, but you can pour me some more if you want. And and he was really cool about it, but he didn't know anything about it either. I might have been the only person to ever order it, but I'll look it up here. I'm not exactly sure where it's from. I know that they distributed a little bit in California, I think mainly in Southern California. The pricing I saw online was about $80 a bottle, which is kind of what I figured. But at that price, I would very quickly put a bottle or two in my bar for sure. It was awesome. I really hope I can track it down and bring some to IPCPR, John, because I think you'd love it, man.
Nice.
Sorry to interrupt you, John. I was just reading this thing to kind of switch the gear a second. When you were talking about foie gras and food and meat and thinking about like animals, did you know that the smell of fresh cut grass is actually referred to as plant anguish? And what happens when you cut the grass, the grass releases a hormone to alert larger animals that smaller animals are eating the grass. So when a small animal eats the grass, it releases this hormone to let like predators know that there's a little guy over here that you can come eat and avoid it from eating me anymore. So plants actually do feel for all the vegans.
It's called plant anguish.
Yeah, look it up. It's called plant anguish. It's the smell of fresh cut grass.
Maybe that's why we all like the smell of that. Everybody loves that smell.
We're the bigger animal.
That's funny. Wow, that's deep, man. That's the deepest thing we've ever talked about on this show.
Plant anguish.
Okay, so I just pulled up Bell Mead Bourbon. It's made at Nelson's Green Briar Distillery. And where the hell is that?
Greenbrier's in West Virginia, at least I thought it was. There's the Greenbrier in West Virginia.
Nelson's Greenbrier Distillery. Where are you? Contact. Hold on. It is. I have their phone. It's a 615 area code. Does that do anything for anyone? Anyone? Sure. Anyone?
I wish I knew area codes that well, but I don't.
Oh wait, it's Nashville.
That would make sense.
It's they're just outside of Nashville. It does make sense, but this. It's fantastic. So
you can go get your crowned heads and get your Bell Mead.
Yeah, actually, I'm gonna give John a call and say, hey, brother, you got to check this stuff out because, yeah, it was legit, man. my wife and I were sitting there. We just finished dinner and we're on our phones Googling trying to figure out how to get a bottle of this stuff. She loved it too. So, anyway, story for another time, but it was awesome.
Yeah, the cost makes sense because no one in the world drinks sherry anymore. Sherry is completely out of fashion. And everyone's super stoked about drinking all these beverages that have been distilled and finished in sherry casks. The problem is there's no sherry casks. So yeah, it doesn't surprise me at all that it's $90 because, they're paying they're probably paying close to $200 for a single sherry cask. And I don't know how many times they can get a use out of it, but it's not a lot before the sherry starts to not impart anything to that bourbon anymore.
Yeah,
I'm telling you.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, I like pretty much everything that is either fermented or distilled, especially when it comes to wine, and I absolutely 100% hate Vino Sherry, I hate Flor Sherry, I hate Oloroso Sherry, I hate Pedro Ximenez, I hate it. I hate it more than anything on the face of the planet. Just put it out there. That and pickles. I hate pickles.
Now, Tony, I have to ask you.
That's a visceral reaction.
So have you had a lot of scotch that's finished in like Pedro Ximenez or Oloroso? Or?
Yeah, I drank the Glenmorangie sherry today. I tasted it before I got home. Yeah. And it was good. You know, that's what kind of stinks because I want to like support the sherry cask business, but I don't want to support
the
sherry business, which obviously the price is, like you said, is going to go through the roof if I keep not drinking sherry and drinking sherry cask whiskey. So maybe at one point they'll be able to make it, dump it out, which they should do anyway, and then put the whiskey in it. And
that works for me.
I was going to say that's actually some of the stories I've sort of off the record stories that I've heard from distilleries who I won't name is they've said that some distilleries have resorted to buying a cask, filling it with an inexpensive sherry, and dumping it because it's just cheaper than waiting on the cask availability.
That's the after dark stuff right there.
Yeah,
I'm looking at this. It's a 9-year old bourbon, and it's finished in Oloroso sherry casks.
Oh.
And it's it's a limited release too. Looking at the bottle, and I'm such a visual guy. If I saw this bottle, I'd never buy it. And I can't really do a screen share with you because this image is too small. But I would never buy it. It just doesn't look appealing. But it was fantastic, and I'm gonna have to track down a couple of bottles. It's gonna be one of those things. If I find a place and they have three bottles of it, I'll probably buy all three. It was really good. I enjoyed it. Anyway,
buy four and I'll take one off you.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll probably buy whatever they've got, unless it's like 10. I mean, nobody needs 10 bottles. Like I don't, but I think three would be my max. But
do you guys know the story of sherry? Why it exists?
No,
I don't.
It's a purposely oxidized white wine. You know, even Oloroso sherries, Pedro Ximenez, those started off as white wines. You drink Pedro Ximenez, it's like syrup. But it was a white wine. Pedro Ximenez is a gray grape, and which means white wine. But they purposefully oxidize it. It's like taking a bottle of Sauvignon Blanc and putting it in a pitcher and then setting it outside for the entire summer and then going back and then drinking it. But then sometimes the yeast switches from anaerobic respiration, which means not needing oxygen, to aerobic respiration, and it flows to the top and creates a cap called the floor. And the floor on the top kind of protects this wine from being oxidized, but not really. It just makes it taste like straight salt water. So you either have salt water or purposefully oxidized white wine. So it's like leaving an apple. It's like leaving an apple on your kitchen table and then revisiting it like 2 months later. That's why I hate sherry.
That is awful, man.
Yeah.
I feel like my wife and I, we were at dinner. We were actually, and I'm not doing like a name drop thing, but we were eating it at Bobby Flay's restaurant, his new restaurant in New York called Gatto. And we were going to they don't serve cat. But it was called Gatto.
I was gonna say, like, my limited Spanish. I'm like, that's cat.
Yeah, it's we all know Gatto and Biblioteca and Playa. We all know that.
Well, I know I know Guato el Tuerto because that's a famous dirty bar in Cuba. But continue. Yeah,
I don't know that, but we'll move forward. No, the restaurant was fantastic. The food was great. It was not cheap, but it was really, really good. It was worth it. And I think at the end of the night, we had I may be confusing restaurants. But I think that they brought us some sherry, and it was really good. It was actually kind of sweet. It wasn't nasty, and it's not the when I think of sherry, I think of like cooking sherry, and that's the flavor
that's the saltwater one that I'm talking about. But then the Olorosos and the Pedro Ximenez's, those are the ones that are so oxidized that it actually starts to turn sweet, which is strange.
Okay. Yeah, so that was it was on along those lines. He didn't say what it was. It was just kind of like, here, thanks for coming to dinner and enjoy it. And it was good. I mean, it was fine. The gelato was great. But, I think that might have been the first time that I ever had sherry that I either remember or enjoyed. I just think of, the salty version that you have in your cabinet to cook with. So I want to go back, Tony, real quick to something you're talking about with with wine, and you know, it can last, you know, like you're saying, about a week, and sometimes it gets better. When you say, how do you store it? Do you put the cork back in? You put it in the fridge? Do you leave it on the counter? Like, what is it that you do?
The thing with the refrigerator is, the refrigerator cork is very porous, right? It's very absorbent. That's why wines age very well. The reason why they age is because they're actually slowly oxidizing. Mm-hmm. It's because the cork is porous. So over the course, say you have a Bordeaux that you want to drink in 25 years, the wine is actually slowly oxidizing. You can see it by the changing color in the wine. So the wine, instead of being like a bright, like ruby color, starts to become like bricky, almost port-like tawny color. Over time, it's like I said, like biting into an apple and leaving them on the counter. That oxidation, you know, obviously is rust and makes stuff turn brown. So that being said, the cork is porous. So the cork will tend to absorb the flavors and the smells that are in your refrigerator. So if you recork a wine and put it in your fridge, then it might end up smelling and tasting like, in my case, pizza, Sunday dinner, and Miller High Life. So,
so it's the champagne of beers. You like bubbly, right?
Yes, this is the champagne of beers. But anyway, but yeah, so a refrigerator tends to do that, you know, because it's a closed environment with a lot of concentrated flavors and smells. So that I literally leave it on my kitchen counter or at my bar, just with the cork in it. My dad likes to take the air out. I don't. He has one of those like penis pump things that you take the air out of it.
That's not my bag, baby.
So I leave the air in because I want the wine to oxidize, because I want it to open up. And you know, wine's best friend and its worst enemy is oxygen. It's like cigars with humidity. Like humidity can be a cigar's worst enemy or its best friend. You know, if you're aging cigars.
Interesting. Okay, so that's cool. Because my wife and I, we drink a lot of the wine, and this is actually like a wine fridge, or it was supposed to be, and now it's full of beer. There's a fair amount of wine in there too, but that's interesting because we do feel that pressure to finish it, even though we usually just finish it. But so letting it sit, especially the big reds, right? So the bigger, yeah, the bigger, the longer it can sit. That's interesting to know.
Right, and just like this. This treasure hunter, like, I'm definitely going to finish the Cava tonight, without question. That you can't let sit. That, when you open that up, you got to drink it.
Absolutely.
But that's the fun part about it. So, you know. But with this cab, this Red Mountain cab, it's a 2012, so it's pretty young, and it's pretty big. So I'll drink it tomorrow with some cold pizza or with some pasta. You know, that's kind of the way I roll, you know. So I think it's pretty cool that you can get away with it. I mean, you have to be careful. I mean, it will go bad. It'll go bad like day 8, day 9. I mean, a week is really pushing it. Like you can't have a bottle for 10 days. But like I said, because we have the bar, you know, I've really been pushed. I've pushed the limits because I want to see how long I can stretch it out. When we open up something that's really not that popular, you know, I'll smell it, taste it every week for a week straight. And, you know, like day 10, I got to toss it. But that 7-day mark, it still drinks pretty good.
That's awesome. This sounds like a good my wife and I have another blog that we do called mixedandmashed.com. And she does a lot of recipes, and I talk about a lot about beer. But that sounds like a good kind of experiment for us to do. We'll open a bottle of wine and we'll just taste a little bit of it each day and kind of see how that goes and see how long we can keep it for.
And it's like, I mean, it's like that. It goes from good to discernibly bad, like that.
Real
quick. You'll open up a bottle and you're like, oh my God, this is terrible. And yesterday it was fine.
That's interesting though. I think because that's the kind of thing most people, like my wife is about as educated on wine as like an average person can be. And I mean, she works for a wealthy family and does all their party planning and event planning, and they actually grow grapes, and she manages their property in, are they in Napa or are they in Sonoma? I think they're in Sonoma. And, she manages that property, and so she does her events, and we've been able to taste some really extravagant wine, bond wines, and Harlan stuff, and things that normally I would never taste. So
right,
but we still don't know. That's the kind of thing that we don't like. Really, we could keep it for a week and just leave it on the counter. So it's interesting. I'm curious. That's definitely going to be an experiment that we do.
Well, it's funny because I learned that when I was studying for my last WSET, because I had to. It was a blind taste. So I went to Bed Bath & Beyond and got a Lazy Susan for the middle of my table. And I brown bagged 15 wines. And I opened them all up, and every night I would taste 15 wines. But I obviously am not finishing 15 bottles, right?
Sure.
So I would go through and I would taste, and I would take notes on them, and then I would see if I can go back the next day and recognize that same wine or be close, recognize. Yeah, I would take, I wasn't doing like 2012 Rockpiles Zinfandel versus 2011 Rockpiles Zinfandel. I was doing like Napa Cab, Sonoma Cab, Washington Cab, Bordeaux, sure, so on and so forth. So those flavors are pretty discernible, and I just realized that over that week, you know, the wines did change, but for the better, and then it, you know, it's like a parabola, but it goes real down real sharp. So it goes up like this, and then it just kind of drops. But you can definitely smell and taste. You can definitely smell and taste it when it goes.
That does sound like a fun experiment. Tony, I have a question for you. What's your sensitivity level to like sulfur in wines?
Well, sulfur, you know, sulfites are a byproduct of fermentation no matter what. So, it happens during fermentation. My tolerance is pretty good. I mean, especially when they use sulfites to preserve the wine, some get a little aggressive. That's one of those things that, you know, also benefits with time. That sulfur burns off the top of the wine. So you open it up, throw it in the decanter, and open it up before you leave. If you're gonna drink something at dinner, you know, especially these big wines, you open it up, pour it in the decanter, and leave for the day. And then when you come back, the wine's finally ready to drink. Some of them are. You know, especially this new big stuff that's coming out there. But, you know, I don't really, it doesn't really affect me that much. You know, I don't know. You drink a ton of wine.
I was at a tasting with a bunch of closed distillery Port Charlotte stuff. And so, I mean, most of this stuff is, you know, it's been sitting in a cask for 20, 25 years. And I came across one of the casks. Obviously, they'd probably use the sulfur stick in the cask. And I mean, the sulfur was, I don't know if I'm just super sensitive to sulfur, but like as soon as I taste sulfur, for me, it's just, that's all I can taste. As soon as I pick it up on the nose or the taste, that's all I can taste. And it just dominates for me. I've been pretty lucky when it comes to wine. I've not come across a lot of super sulfur wines. But interestingly enough, I've come across it with scotch more than I have with wines.
Yeah. I mean, my personal sensitivity. I'm like that with, that's why I hate pickles. I can smell a pickle from here. It drives me crazy. And then everything I taste, like if a French fry touches a pickle, all my fries taste like pickles. And I hate yellow mustard too for that reason. Because if there's yellow mustard on something, it might as well just be like cardboard, because I can't taste anything but yellow mustard or pickles. Which blows my mind about people that eat hamburgers. It's like, you're eating a hamburger, you want to taste a hamburger, not mustard, and that's, or pickles. Like, what? It just doesn't make any sense to me. It drives me up a wall. Anyway. Yeah, I can see the problem with sulfur. That's right. That's why I can see your sulfur problem.
So I've got two comments. One, when we were in D.C., we were eating at a restaurant that does, they do a lot of charcuterie, and they make all their own stuff, so we had some really interesting things. And I had ordered a beer, and it was, I can't remember what it was from, but it was really good. It was like a Belgian sour, but it was actually really, really tasty. And I was looking at the beer list, and my wife wanted a beer, and the server was kind of, she was kind of pretentious, but at the same time, Dana was asking about, you know, the beer list, and she said, the server said, well, you should have your husband pick a beer for you, because I was explaining some of the beers to her. And then Dana thought that she said that you should have, that the server should pick the beer for her. So she had the server pick the beer. And she picked this beer that was, it was kind of a Belgian, but it had a lot of lemon notes in it. And she called it hoppy, but there wasn't much of a hoppy note in it. And Dana didn't like it. And I tasted it. And the first time I tasted it was fine. And then I took the second taste, and I got it on the nose, and I got it on the tongue, and I couldn't not taste it after that. And it was this, that taste of...
Band-Aids?
No. Band-Aids. Used? No. It was that taste, like, you know when you're talking to somebody, and they have bad breath, and it's, like, very clear that they don't floss? You know that smell? That kind of, that biting halitosis smell? I could just get a little bit of that on the beer, and after that, I was like, I was done. I couldn't drink it. And then, unfortunately, I told everybody that's what I was tasting, and then they all tasted it, too. So it was whatever that beer was. I don't remember what it was, but it was horrible. You don't want to taste halitosis in your beer. And the other thing, when you said hamburgers, I had Shake Shack for the first time. And I don't know if you guys have had Shake Shack. It's Tony, you probably had it.
I have surprisingly, I have not had Shake Shack. Everybody wants... Because it's in, they're all over Miami, but every time I go down there, it's I get Spanish food for whatever reason.
I haven't had Whataburger, so I definitely haven't had Shake Shack.
Yeah, it was, well, Shake Shack is, it's like the East, everybody says it's the East Coast equivalent to In-N-Out Burger, which is a West Coast
thing. It essentially is, yeah.
Yeah, and In-N-Out Burger is good, but I mean, I could drive down the street and get it. I'd have to wait in a long line, but I could get it. But the Shake Shack, we had it in Madison Square Park, which is just a really nice park. And there was a really long line, and we waited, and I was kind of pissed that we were waiting, and I was tired, and we had to keep walking. And we got this burger, and it might have been the best burger I've ever had in my life. No pickles, no onions, no ketchup, no mayonnaise, no mustard. They have their, like, their own secret sauce, like a Thousand Island-type sauce, who knows. But, oh, my God, it was so good. And that, when you said that when somebody has a burger, you don't want to taste pickles, you don't want to taste... mustard, you want to taste the burger? That's exactly what they did. It was phenomenal. If you get a chance to have Shake Shack, have it.
Having a burger, okay, here's a good one. Having a burger with mustard and all that shit on it is like smoking a flavored cigar. You don't taste the tobacco. I'm not saying it's bad. I'm not saying it's flavored cigars.
I mean, obviously, No, go ahead.
If you want coffee, drink a cup of coffee because you want to taste the coffee. But if you want to smoke a cigar and taste tobacco, you can't add flavor to it. It's like that with hamburgers. If you have a really good hamburger, it should speak for itself. I think the hamburger should stand alone.
So when you get your, when you order a hamburger, is there nothing on it?
Cheese.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And what I really like on hamburgers is egg. I really like egg, like a fried egg. So we have Michael Simon, his main restaurants are in Cleveland, so we go up there all the time. And he has a Lola burger, and on the Lola burger, it's cheese, bacon, ketchup, which I'm okay with ketchup because we're so close to Pittsburgh. It's like, that's like Heinz.
No choice. Yeah.
But bacon and then a fried egg. And it's on like a ciabatta pretzel, like buttered bun, which is unbelievable. But it... I'm okay with that because it's not mustard or pickles or onion.
Yeah, mustard really does. If you don't like, I like mustard. I like that flavor. Like I like to dip a pretzel in it or you know whatever, and I like that. But if you don't like that flavor, it's definitely going to dominate your palate. So anyway, the Shake Shack was, and I told my. It's funny. We waited in this long line. And we ended up just getting one burger and just sharing it. And now it's like I'm kicking myself because I could have eaten like five of them just on my own. And we had a really good milkshake too. But yeah, if you see Shake Shack, get the burger. It's fantastic. Anyway, we'll move forward.
Nice. So, Tony, you were saying this year at the IBCPR, we'll find you at the Caldwell booth. Is that correct?
Yep. All right. I'll be sitting in the corner, in my little corner, my wares.
So that's where we'll find Tony and we'll find the kava there. And although I have a feeling I'm going to get my hands on some of that kava beforehand. Because is it shipping now?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You can order right from the website.
Yeah, shipping's going to cost me an arm and a leg, but
not that bad because it's coming from California. I think it's like $25 for a case.
So is it shipping from Oakland?
Yeah, we have a co-op warehouse, so all of our stuff is kept in a warehouse with a bunch of other small manufacturers, like all the Treasure Hunter stuff, all of our Viva La Vida stuff. I don't know what other companies are in there, but smaller companies, you know, because it costs right now, it's ridiculous. It costs like $4 million or $5 million to get the blonde in order to have in order to hold alcohol in California.
What? So,
wow.
Yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. I don't know the number. I could be way off base, but I know it's more than I have. And when it's more than what I have, it doesn't really matter what it could be, $1 trillion.
Just throw $30 million out there. It sounds good.
It's $1,001.
Yeah.
So all the basically like the bigger houses like Mondavi, Gallo, like Sutter Home, Constellation.
Sure.
Those guys, since they already have the bond, will let smaller guys use their warehouse and kind of rent warehouse space from them, and they'll do all the fulfillment as far as getting the wine to the distributors, so that we don't have to put up the money for that bond. I mean, they charge us for it.
Sure.
They definitely make money. But that's kind of the situation where, you know, the barrier to entry on that is ridiculous. Like, if you wanted to open up a winery tomorrow and keep all your wine on premise, it's ridiculous. I mean, it's like $30 or $40 million barrier to entry. Because there's so many out there.
Wow.
So could I go pick it up? Or do I need a bonded truck to pick it up?
I think you need a bonded truck to pick it up. I think what if you, I we just, can only send it to you.
What if I just... Send it to you. Sorry, go ahead.
You can go to the... I can get you the address. You can go knock and see what happens. I have no idea.
I'll just paint a big B on the top of my car, and it makes it look like it's bonded, right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, there we go. That's perfect. That's it. There we go. We got it all squared away. That's good. I'm glad.
The address gladly. Just go knock.
Just go knock on the door. Hey, I ordered a case of the cava. Can I just pick it up here? That's awesome. No, yeah, we're gonna. As soon as we get offline, we're definitely gonna talk about that because this is this sounds like something that I know that I would enjoy and my wife would enjoy as well. So very much so. John, it's your show, and I keep talking too much.
It's all good, brother. Tony, thanks so much for being on the show. We're definitely gonna have to do a La Barba 3.0, and we're just gonna rage on wine. And of course, coming up the IPCPR, I think we're gonna have a few nights because we'll talk offline about it. But we've rejiggered our schedule here so that we can be available and not be stuck in a hotel room till 3 a.m. So
that's crazy.
I think we're gonna be raging on some wine and cigars when we come down to the IPCPR for sure.
That's good. I look forward to that, man. Vegas.
It's gonna be fun. It's going to be fun. John got us our hotel rooms. I said I was going to do it 4 months ago, and John did it over the weekend. So there you go. That's how things get done. John's a den mother. You are the den mother, dude. That's awesome. That's awesome. If it weren't for you, nothing would get done.
There you go. So that takes us to the end of our After Dark segment. Again, Tony, thanks so much for being on the show. We'll definitely have to have a La Barba 3.0. I think right after IPCPR will be good timing. Have some time for you to maybe take some breaths because I know the IPCPR is a heck of a show and it's crazy busy. Appreciate you sharing all the knowledge on wine, and I think we've barely scratched the surface here, but thanks for everyone who's tuning in live. Thanks for all our podcast listeners. Make sure to subscribe whatever you're listening through, iTunes or whatever. Definitely subscribe because we'll get you the latest content, and all our back catalog is now available, so check it out. And as we were saying, sharing our pairings, drink better but drink less.